Welcome to Modern Practice. In the last few years, artificial intelligence, or AI, has emerged from a concept of science fiction into an exciting prospect for the real world, from an area of pathology to electronic medical records. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and on this episode, we'll welcome Dr. Shannon Sims to discuss the concept of artificial intelligence and machine learning and what those have to do with clinical practice. Shannon, first of all, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Shannon, tell us a little bit about your background and your current role here at Vizient.
Yeah, my current role at Vizient is Vice President of Data Intelligence and Interoperability. That's a fancy way of saying that I lead a lot of our strategy and operational work on how we get data, use data, and then pass data along back to our clients.
Shannon, you hear lots of terms like AI, machine learning, deep learning, data science, big data. Help me understand all these things and what they mean.
So when I think about all of those terms, let's start with big data. Like all the rest of the world, healthcare has had all their information digitized and computerized. But healthcare has lagged, as it often does, behind the rest of industry by a couple of decades. So in the last 10 or 20 years, we've seen EMRs be heavily used in hospitals and other healthcare settings. And as a result, we've got this just absolute tsunami of data sitting out there. And as that big data era has come into being for healthcare, we've seen data science grow up with it, because now suddenly there's a bunch more data to chew on for our epidemiologists and our data sciences. So I think of those two things as going hand in hand. The big data era has spawned the data science era, which before this tsunami of data was primarily an academic area focused on statistics and epidemiology. So the areas of data science that have really gotten hot is specifically artificial intelligence. So AI is a subset of data science in the way that cardiology is a subset of internal medicine. And so that's the right way to think about that. And then machine learning is a branch of AI, and deep learning, which is a really heavily computational, almost black boxy, we don't know what the computer's doing, version of machine learning. So that's the way that I think all those puzzle pieces fit together. But I think for most purposes, AI can be used in a lot of different ways. There's not one dictionary definition that works for everybody, but that's how I think about it.
That was really helpful. Thank you. Actually, particularly considering as a subspecialty. So how can this actually improve in healthcare right now? Can you tell us ways or even areas?
The way that I think about artificial intelligence is it has two main functions. The first function is it can help us understand things that happened. So an example that I'll use throughout this conversation is readmission. So if somebody comes back to the hospital 15 days after they were discharged, there could be any number of reasons for that. It could be their personal situation. It could be the medications. It could just be environmental factors like there's smoke in the air or other considerations like that. So what machine learning can help us do is to take all those variables, throw it into a blender, and then help you understand which of the factors for an individual patient is either most predictive or helps you best understand what happened to that patient, why they came back to the hospital. The second thing that machine learning or artificial intelligence can do is it can help you predict what's going to happen. So based on that learning of understanding, in the case of readmissions, why a patient came back, you can understand, based on what we know about what causes readmissions, who's likely to be a readmission and why. I think that this is really exciting. I mean, the predictions help you make decisions as a care team, as a physician, a nurse, et cetera. But there's also this notion of prescriptive analytics. Prescriptive analytics is not only predicting what will happen, but also trying to understand which interventions, if used, is likely to impact that. So in other words, should I be more focused on educating the patient about their drugs, making sure that they have reliable transportation so that they can get to the pharmacy to fill their drugs, those kinds of things. So in other words, prescriptive means not only who's likely to be at risk, but what can I do to mitigate that risk? And that's what I think is what's most exciting about artificial intelligence. It's not only arming our clinical teams with what might happen, but what they can do to actually improve outcomes.
Using AI, we can actually kind of gather the data on what happened, then we can predict for future episodes and then be prescriptive in the sense of what we could do to predict activities going into the future. That definitely helps us with efficiency and actually in lots of ways even decrease burden.
Yeah, absolutely. I always want to caution at the end of the day, right? Machine learning is math enabling clinicians to make better decisions. And so this isn't the introduction of penicillin or the sterile technique, let's say, but there is obviously a huge amount of opportunity to help people make decisions. And that at the end of the day is what we're doing with machine learning and other forms of algorithmic approaches, is help our clinical teams make the best decisions possible for the best possible outcomes.
So it sounds pretty promising, but I'm still from an era when I started out my practice that I was still writing in a chart. And when the EMRs came out, there was this promise about population health, information sharing, even less administrative burden. And let's be honest, that hasn't exactly been the case. So how do you think the shared promise of AI and EMR matches up with reality today?
Yeah, I get this question a lot. Where are we at in our EMR journey? And as a secondary, what about machine learning? When I think about electronic medical records or EMRs, I think about them as being in their tempestuous adolescent years. They're not babies anymore, but they're kind of rude. They do things you don't understand, and you have a definite love-hate relationship with them as they get through this formative period. In contrast, machine learning, I would say, is more in its infancy or maybe its toddler phase. I say toddler because when my kids were toddlers, all I was trying to do was prevent them from harming themselves and others. And that may be where we're at with artificial intelligence today. I think there is a ton of potential. I think I might lose my lunch if another vendor comes to me and says, I have a transformative technology or solution that's going to save you millions of dollars and improve all of these patients' lives. I just don't think that that promise has been realized yet.
Thank you. Actually, that's very transparent. How is AI used in efforts towards coronavirus, and could we have done more?
Well, I think we're all aware that there were lots of predictive models out there, and a lot of those incorporated AI approaches. So those models looked at how many patients were expected to use hospital services like the intensive care unit or a ventilator. They were also used to predict things like what would be the burn rate of personal protective equipment. In other words, how many masks and gowns did hospitals need to have on hand to handle the influx of expected patients? One of the interesting things about machine learning is that it does best when you have extremely complicated cases or extremely high volumes of data to process. So with COVID, it didn't take many patients to see that, for example, we were seeing lots of patients with blood clots and with out of proportion inflammatory responses. You didn't need a 10,000 person cohort to identify that. You just really needed to see a few patients. So in that sense, I don't know that machine learning was really a magic bullet. We saw a bunch of companies stepping up, from EMR vendors to insurance companies and a whole pantheon of industry leaders trying to aggregate data to support machine learning and other approaches that might help mitigate the COVID impact on the population. There's also opportunities in AI to look at radiology. There's been a lot of successes there. Perhaps we could have applied those machine learning approaches to more quickly identify chest x-ray findings or CT or MRI findings, perhaps to more clearly identify what was going on with patients who had COVID or were experiencing complications. So those are some opportunities. If I'm being honest, though, I think that for the most part, this was more of a public health issue rather than a machine learning problem. It could make some contributions at the margins beyond what it already did. But I think for the most part, it was used effectively. And there wasn't much more runway for it to really contribute to the mitigation of COVID.
On the other hand, there have been challenges in realizing the potential, no?
Artificial intelligence writ large has some large, I would say, infrastructure issues to overcome. One of those infrastructure issues is, despite the explosion of digital data, a lot of that data resides in different places. So if you're taking care of a patient, there's data sitting in your electronic medical record. The insurance company has information. The retail pharmacies like Walgreens and CVS, they have information about your patient. There's all kinds of data out there about the patient. And that all doesn't necessarily flow easily together in a way and in a central place where you can do these machine learning approaches. The problem with that is if you don't do these machine learning approaches on all the right data, that's the problem, because you might not get the right answers when you're trying to understand what happens to patients or if you're trying to predict what happens to them. So that remains one of the big challenges. Another challenge, and I know we're going to talk about this more a little bit later, is you can encourage bias, whether that's gender or race or age, if you're not appropriately creating these machine learning models. And that's another structural issue that I worry about as a challenge that's going to be quite difficult to tackle.
Thank you, Shannon. We'll actually be addressing that in the second episode of this series. So how do you tie this into quality in healthcare? I know that's a big issue.
Yeah, AI and quality go hand in hand, I think, for a couple of reasons. The first reason they go hand in hand is quality is always looking for opportunities to understand how we can do better. And whether that's a proactive, we want to engage our patients, we want to engage our providers, and we want to proactively identify opportunities to improve their outcomes, then machine learning can be the seed, can provide that information for them. The other piece of the puzzle is that, as I mentioned, it can help you understand what happens. And quality, unfortunately, is often both a retrospective as well as a prospective looking thing. And so it's often the case that you want to understand why this adverse safety event or why this adverse quality outcome happened. And so machine learning can help you do that. It's just another tool in their tool belt of solutions to help them get better. But like all the rest of the tools, it has to be selectively applied and intelligently used in order for it to bring true value.
So I see now the opportunities and the potential. And I can certainly see the CMIO involved with this and some other technicians. And you mentioned about data scientists. But who else should be involved in the development of this? I mean, should it be also our end user clinician or even the CMO?
Absolutely. The clinicians need to be involved. I think we need to think about machine learning in the same way that we think about drugs and devices. We need to have trials to ensure their efficacy and safety, as well as their applicability to a general population. So we need a large swath of folks involved. We need the frontline clinicians. We need professional societies. I believe we need some regulatory oversight here. And lastly, I think we need academia to step up and really participate in this with us. That's going to be painful because this has largely been an industry-based initiative so far, meaning that it's mostly coming out of vendors. There are a few spot academic centers that do this kind of thing, but the real beast on the horizon on this front is going to come from the vendor community. And they're not going to want to be beholden to the usual academic medicine processes and oversight.
I can certainly understand that. But for many of our colleagues, they're going to want to see evidence that this is effective. Has there been any evidence of successfully applying these types of approaches to healthcare?
Yeah, absolutely. They've been mostly spot successes. And by spot successes, I mean they have a limited scope. It's not something that's deployed across the whole country or thousands and thousands of medical centers, that kind of thing. But certainly radiology in the area of imaging, artificial intelligence has seen a lot of demonstrated successes. There's a lot of talk that radiologists should fear for their future. I don't see that anytime in our generation and probably the next. Certainly, I could be wrong about that. I would think that in that case, artificial intelligence will remain an adjunct, will be a supportive technology for them. It clearly can help support human intervention, but I don't see it replacing it anytime soon. Similarly, on things like more medically based issues, like predicting kidney failure in diabetic patients, certainly it can help clinicians understand and predict who's likely to progress in their disease and what interventions might help. There have been many demonstrated, and by demonstrated, I mean published examples of machine learning helping, but there have been many more machine learning approaches that haven't helped. And as we all know, in the academic world, negative results don't tend to get published. So it's difficult to quantify exactly how that's all playing out. But that's how I see things going.
Thanks, Shannon. This ends part one of our discussion. On the next podcast, we'll continue our examination of AI and its impact on medical and clinical practice. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, and send your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast in the latest healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.